Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Yun Lee has come from Princeton to Los Angeles just to be on Bookworm. I feel grateful because her new book, Where Reasons End, is a very profound and unusual book, and it tiptoes. You wouldn't know necessarily that it was a profound book or even a heartbreaking one because it proceeds so methodically. The book's title is Where Reasons End. The phrase is derived from an Elizabeth Bishop poem, which is used as an epigraph. But where do reasons end?
Where do reasons end? That's a good question. I think that's where these conversations begin. And, you know, I think we live our lives, or we strive to live our lives with good judgment, good reasons. And when something happens, we try to find an explanation. And all these things are around reasons.
Yes. Well, the amazing thing about this book is that a son has died. His name is Nikolai. He's died before his 16th birthday in this book. And his mother has found him in an after place. Some might use the term bardo. But there's an afterlife in which the two are capable of communicating. Sometimes it's in dream. Sometimes it's not out loud. Sometimes one is talking and the other is hearing. But sometimes one is not talking and the other is hearing. It's an extraordinary condition that only gradually dawns on the reader that this is the rare occasion, the impossible occasion, when a mother is allowed to speak with a child after the child has died.
Yes. Sometimes I think parenting is an interesting task. Parenting is to stay in realism. You have to be realistic. You have to do everything in this concrete way, in this real world. But parenting sometimes stops, or, you know, a child dies. And all of a sudden, you take a leave from realism, and you have to find yourself somewhere to go.
This mother and son continue to talk almost as if life had not been interrupted. Mm-hmm. She talks to him about the poems that he wrote when he was alive and about the ones that she'll never get to read and the ones that she won't read because there are computer files that she and her husband do not open. It's interesting because this book, in a way, takes place in one of those unopened files.
Oh, I have not thought about that.
I'll bet not. But I realized that this book gave the opportunity for a reader to experience a privacy without any boundary. Mm-hmm. It's simple. This mother is talking to her child. The child seems to be an extraordinary child, yes?
Yes, you know, sharp, bright, prideful, you know, with that youthful arrogance, poetic, everything.
Yes, this boy criticizes his mother's vocabulary, has read his mother's stories, only likes some of them. He's a very, very critical fellow. It's hard, for me at least, not to identify him with you and your child. Mm-hmm. Were you afraid of that loss of distance?
When I was writing, I was not afraid of losing the distance. In fact, I think it was that distance between me and the mother in the book that kept the book going.
And yet, at the same time, it had achieved the separation that it needed to achieve to be a novel.
Mm-hmm. I think that is the beauty of fiction. And you know, anyone could say which part of the story happened. Nothing, because this conversation, as you said, takes place after life, after time, in a space where there's no time, there's no image. So, yes, I think sometimes life is so difficult that you almost have to rely on fiction.
The only thing I could think of this afterlife in the fictional worlds I know is Neverland in Peter Pan's book, and the idea, not the actuality, but the idea of the lost boys, of them being in this place with Peter where they don't have to grow up. In your book, whatever this place is, the boy will continue to grow up there.
Yes. He also, he has grown up even when he was a child. So he has done a lot of growing up before his time. And he presented himself as this young boy who, you know, as you said, a little mean sometimes, but he's a good poet and good editor. Good conversational partner, but he is going to grow in this space.
We are reading this book as privileged visitors to a sadness that is only being expressed between the characters, which is different from grief or mourning. Mm-hmm. They are not expressing grief and mourning. Many people, when I tell them about this book, say, oh, I don't know if I could read it. But my experience, now I am not a parent, my experience was of an extraordinary, profound access. So many parents right now are dealing with children who have left the world due to the opioid crisis. This is an intentional suicide, and we are watching the conversation of two people who both know what the temptation to suicide feels like. The boy knows it in his mother, the mother knows it in her son, and this is a very irregular sharing that's going on because they both know that the other has been in a place that they have been in.
Yeah. And yet, I think in one way, they found that place where they could have the freedom to talk about things. You're right, they're not grieving, they're not mourning, because they still have each other. And in a way, they challenge each other. They both are fearless.
I'm talking to Yiyun Lee about her novel, Where Reasons End. It's a beautiful book published by Random House. Now, I'm curious. Those of you who know Yiyun Lee's work also know that she came here from China, that she never wrote in Chinese, that she began writing when she was here in medical school in Iowa, where she began working with people like Marilyn Robinson, who saw the integrity of the stories being written, recommended them to the New Yorker. They were published there. A novel, two novels were published, books of short stories, the admiration of great writers like William Trevor. But do you feel that writing in English, a language that you were not born with, gave you access to this impossible dialogue in this book?
Yes. Yes, I think so. And, you know, I think in the book, Nikolai and the mother keep challenging each other to be more precise, to use the right words. And I think that is part of me writing in English. Every word has to be measured and weighed and see if it's the right word.
Yes, they speak of precision, the absence of precision, as being one of the things that infuriates the son. And he is always accusing the mother of using easy words. And the mother is accusing the son of depending on adjectives. She does not use adjectives in abundance, and so he, in retaliation, when one adjective would do, he uses three.
Yes, it's the luxury of being young and having the guilty pleasure of, as Nikolai said, you know, adjectives are my guilty pleasure.
Yes, well, they certainly are for him. He seems not to have control over when he is seen. He appears sometimes in dreams. Sometimes when she wakens, the mother tells Nikolai the dream in which he appeared. Mm-hmm. So some of these conversations, well, let's put it this way. The word real has reinvented meanings. The conversations are real when they're not the conversations in dream, but are they real? Yes, in this book, they are. And that's what makes this book so special. It takes place under what I would call a special dispensation.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, yes, I suppose so. And I think in that world, they can talk that. I mean, I would say it's actually a great fortune for me to listen to them talk that way, because not every day we could encounter a conversation carried at that level with that sharpness.
This boy, Nikolai, as he appears in this book, is a part of his mother's soul. Mm-hmm. And that what we're seeing into is for lack of a better word, Nicholas would ask, soul? Define. What's all? And yet, it is inevitable that he is part the mother's projection, mm-hmm. a condition of sorrowful wonder looms over this novel. Now, you astounded me before we began by saying that you wrote this novel in one draft and only changed 4 or 5 words. Is that a common experience for you?
No. I love revision, and when I write, usually I spend more time revising than writing. But this is, you know, sometimes I think this particular situation asks for a particular kind of book. And this book does not stand revision. Partly, I think Nikolai had such a high standard for their conversation that the mother, even just to have that conversation, to keep writing the conversation, already has done maybe 10 drafts in her head before she could catch up with him.
I'm talking to Yi-Yun Lee. I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. We're talking about the extraordinary novel Where Reasons End. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Yi-Yun Lee about her novel Where Reasons End, an intimate and moving reunion between a mother and son in a timeless world between life and death. Now, I have Yi-Yun Lee's permission to talk about this book. Your son killed himself.
Yes.
After he turned 16.
Yes.
Okay. You've been able to enter the healing world of considering all of the conditions with none of the grief and mourning and heart talk. Mm-hmm. What an amazing choice.
Thank you. I think... I mean, the only thing I could say is I think there are so many ways for this book to go wrong. It could be overly sentimental. It could become a tearjerker. But nothing like that would live up to Nikolai's standard.
It's like an extraordinary tightrope act. And if it is like anything... The two characters seem to be teaching each other a philosophical language in which they can converse without having to call fraud. They're neither of them going to use imprecise words.
Yes. I also was aware that, you know, in a way... Death allowed this conversation to happen, and to happen in such a deep way that in real life we could get a glimpse of that, but we could not maintain a continuous, and when I say we, I mean everybody, you could not maintain that kind of conversation with another soul during this period of time. So the mother and son in the novel, I think, they were liberated in a way, so they could have that conversation.
You'll pardon me if I say that I think the novel is an extraordinary gift to yourself and to your readers, that this is born of unbearable considerations. And it's almost as if the scientist in Yi-Yun Lee has decided to take this specimen and allow it to develop to its fullest, even though allowing it to develop is to tread very near heartbreak and the place where reasons end. Now, this book begins with an extraordinary violation of realism, that the conversation between mother and dead child can continue, and yet it will continue in the realist mode. They will not be flying or living in a fantasy. They are living in the continuation of the world they know. And as they do, they show us what the world they know was like.
Yes, I think you can defy the rule, you know, saying life still can meet death, but you cannot indulge yourself. And I don't, you know, I think one reason I wanted the book to be this way is not to have self-indulgence in it.
It's so extraordinary for you to be able to keep that resolution, not to be self-indulgent, when in fact Nikolai is allowed to be self-indulgent.
Well, that's a mother's love for a child.
It really is. It really is. Because this child, he's brilliant, and he says stubborn and fierce things to his mother about her writing, about her vocabulary, about her English, about her accent. It's really a extraordinarily realized picture of the permissiveness that parenting requires or suffers, regardless whether there's permission or not.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. And yes, that's also the joy of parenting, is you're always facing this son or a child that you always have to strive to understand.
There's nothing like this book that I can think of. Can you think of anything?
No. I would say part of the reason this book was written was I was trying to find a book that could help me understand the process of how to feel after losing a child. I couldn't find a book. So I thought I would write a book for myself.
I felt, oh, this is what a writer is. This is what a writer does. Every potential imprecision must go. Every false word, every heartbreaking, I've lost my child, be sympathetic, love me, help me, save me, not there. All of it treated to the requirements of a novel, in which a novel can't turn to its reader and beg for sympathy. Can't be done. And so this novel really, in the strangest sense, is an excavation and a removal so that it can be externalized and considered with the care of a novelist, always knowing that every step in this novel, not just every word, every gesture, is subject to the possibility of assault. I guess I see that this could only be written in one draft.
I think you're right. You cannot go back to change the words. And also, I feel, you know, this is a book that, you're right, the book cannot beg the reader, but the book has to trust the reader. The reader will come along and read. And for that reason, you know, what was put there on the, during the first draft were the words the readers have to read.
Yes, because I think, does this describe it, that you were already working at such a high level of focus and risk that there was no, that you were not willing to meander or divagate or ramble or even equivocate?
Well, this mother is like Nikolai, has a lot of pride.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Ian, for coming and talking about this book. I know that it's not a book that you've talked about in depth, and I'm very grateful that you were willing to share this conversation with me.
Well, thank you so much, Michael.
It's a great pleasure.
And it's so important to talk with you about the book.
Thank you so much. You can't imagine how much I respect your work in general and what you've done here.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Ian Lee, author of Where Reasons End, published by Random House. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show. Also available at Apple, Spotify, really wherever you can get your podcasts. Plus, you can listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. So the show, along with the entire Bookworm archive, can be heard at any time. Special thanks to my co-producer and assistant, Sean Sullivan. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Elizabeth McCracken is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.